This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 11th of October, 2022, and markets in a pretty bad funk here. We saw yesterday with that U.S. bank holiday, so Treasury markets not trading, but we saw after the close, yields rising once again, and we had a pretty ugly session yesterday with the general yield sensitivity as well in that recent rise in yields. We're seeing the NASDAQ underperforming, and we actually posted a new low close for the NASDAQ. It's why I put it in today's slide deck on slide two there. You can see it closed yesterday at a new cycle low. Where could we go next? Put up a couple of figures here. We have the 10,589 on the cash level would be the next area. And then I would argue, looking down at the 2020 high, which is considerably lower, 96 something or other, to my mind. Just have to look back there. But Peter, I think both you and I are pretty much on the same page here. S&P 500 didn't quite make the new lows there, but feels very negative here. It feels very, very heavy, this market action. Not sure what is going to bring relief. What do you see?
Yeah, we when we had our internal call, we were trading at 3600 and 08, and I mentioned that opening print on the trading session on the 3rd of October, that opening print at 3593 as key level to watch on the downside, and we are just as I'm talking here at that level. I agree with you, the sentiment out there, it feels very fragile. We had Jamie Dimon and Paul Tudor Jones, Paul Tudor Jones being a famous macro trader, very successful one at that, and Jamie Morgan, CEO Jamie Dimon. They both talked about recession, the one talking about his trading playbook, which is that, you know, equities will be lower, it's driven by valuation compressions, etc. And Jamie Dimon said that it's likely that the US will be in a recession within the next 6 to 9 months. I think he's referring to a real recession, so not in nominal terms, but in real terms. And right now we have the Chicago Fed National Activity Index that we have talked so much about. It's hovering around trend growth. And also we've seen a little bit more inversion in the VIX forward curve. I still think that this, you know, snap, like meltdown scenario is still in the cards if something snaps. And then of course on slide two, the theme basket yesterday, you can see, you know, how bubble stocks were just crushed again yesterday. Semiconductors, we'll get back to that later in the discussion. And it's just a little bit of news item, but, you know, Cathie Wood's ARK Invest is now writing an open letter to the Fed. I mean, so the whole growth complex of the equity market is so much under pressure that they feel the heat. Tracks has sent an open letter to the Fed to halt its policy rates trajectory.
I'm sure she'd love to see QE back, given what it might do to her holdings and the infinite duration in many of those equities that she holds in her portfolio. Let's have a look at the dividend futures, because you've made an interesting argument, of course, that the analyst community is still very rosy on their expectations, at least what they've actually put out there for their expectations, whereas dividend futures haven't changed much, or am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, so what we're looking at here on slide three is the futures, or the futures on S&P 500 2023 dividends. So this is a live actual market bets, real money going back and forth on this. And just like a fixed income instrument, as you get closer to expiration, this futures contract will get closer to the actual underlying realized, in the sense paid out dividends. So you get more and more uncertainty as you get closer to expiration. What I find interesting about this chart is that we are lower than the peak in 2021. We're actually flat when you compare to the pre-pandemic level. So for all the growth talks and all the stimulus we have done, the market is not betting the dividend. Compared to our expectations back before the pandemic, we're not much higher. I think that's an interesting story in itself. But then our main point that has been about the equity market is that the next dynamic is these margin compressions, the valuation multiple compressions as well that will come. Wage pressures are galloping, and I think the earnings analyst estimates, I wrote about it on Friday, you can see that on analysis.saxo, they're betting that earnings will be up 9% next year, and just generally when you look through the numbers, they're also betting on profit margins to expand. I think that's highly unlikely in a market or an economy with galloping interest rates and tighter financial conditions, but that's apparently the reality among equity analyst.
Yeah, and you mentioned JP Morgan's Diamond and Paul Tudor Jones, legendary investor. He talks about the recessionary playbook. He also had an interesting the little brief segment I saw of his interview. He was talking about the different decades we've been through, starting with the 70s, and he said he's afraid that the 2020s will be about fiscal retrenchment. And you can see why that might be the case when you're seeing the experience of the UK struggling with their declining currency, with chaos in their bond market, as the fiscal attempts there have gone just a bridge too far for the market to absorb. They're announcing new operations, even though they're going to cancel this, whatever this original operation was, emergency QE, they called it. Basically, they're going into permanent QE, if in all likelihood. And the message is just still not credible. If you look at where the UK bonds are trading, of course, we have pressure anyway from US Treasuries and elsewhere, yields rising. But on slide four, just showing the gilt market, I mean, we're back on the 10-year there to close to 4.5%. We have actually traded above 4.5% yesterday. That was where we were when there was a massive emergency was unfolding that required them to intervene. So they don't have a lid on things. The chancellor's message on the budget is still not credible. There was a some Institute for Fiscal Studies out saying that they need to cut another $60 billion from their projected deficits if they expect for there to be any fiscal probity. And you're seeing also, this is coming at a bad time because we are seeing the UK tilting towards a recession. One of the data points out this morning, the jobless claims up at the highest level it's been in since the pandemic chaos there. And you can see on slide four there, that claims number is really, if you just sort of go ex pandemic volatility there, is at the highest end of the range there since the 08-09 financial crisis experience. So just, where is the relief going to come from? It's hard to tell. We're trading back towards 110 in cable, and euro sterling hitting up against the 88 level. And since we're dragging on too long without including you, Ola, let's go over to the commodities market. We're seeing after that pretty torrid rally there off the lows, the OPEC plus cuts, of course, grabbing attention and pumping prices higher in the crude oil market. We saw a setback yesterday. I assume a lot of that is this strong dollar. And of course, fears for the outlook here.
Yeah, no, don't mind you taking the time here, both Pete and John, because what you basically the story you're telling is the reason why commodities are finding themselves under renewed pressure here. We will obviously continue to find pockets of strength due to tight market conditions. We're seeing that, for instance, in the wheat market, which rallied to near close to their limit, daily limit yesterday. On worries about supplies from Ukraine, we got other key commodities in a similar situation. But we are drifting lower today with this negative sentiment spreading from the financials, the rising yields, the stronger dollar once again. So on slide six, just putting in a Brent chart, you can see we this massive rally. We're now drifting back down. That uptrend is still intact as long as we stay above, I would say, $90. We will hit some local support in the $93 area. So let's see whether we can drift towards that level. I think there's no doubt still that the oil market, even though we are talking about recession and growth risks, the oil market remains tight at this stage. But it obviously doesn't help sentiment when we have strong signals from China that they are going to stick with their zero COVID tolerance policies for now. And that's just continuing to delay a potential pickup from the world's biggest importer.
And you're seeing the battle lines drawn increasingly geopolitically with this move by Saudi Arabia to support that production cut. And at least in the U.S. Congress, there's been a response from the Biden administration itself. But we're also seeing congressional members talking about, you know, severing all economic cooperation and military cooperation with Saudi. I think it's very interesting. Battle lines are being drawn on that front to see what it sort of crystallizes in terms of policy in the coming months on that. So, yeah, just wanted to insert that before you talk about gas, which is really important, which is falling quite a bit here. But these are still, we have to keep in mind, even though they've fallen a lot, these are still, if we were all paying these levels for gas in Europe, would be shutting down economic activity.
We would in the long run, yes, because this is still we're hovering around that 150 euro per megawatt hour, the price right now. And as you can see on as we mentioned on slide 7, we found some support at 145. If you do break, we could set the wheel in motion for a move back down towards that 100 euro level. That will obviously be a relief, but it's still well above where the price we've been paying in the past. And the reasons why we are coming down, even though we've got heightened tension, is simply the fact that Russia's ability to scare is sharply reduced. There's only one pipeline left supplying a minimum amount of gas through Ukraine. With inventory levels as high as they are, we can cope without, especially as long as the competition for LNG out of Asia doesn't heat up too hard over the coming months. Then we'll continue to see the situation, supply and demand balance be our situation be quite okay. Obviously not okay from the fact that we have built up inventory levels to a very high level, and it has come at a massive cost because it's obviously LNG, most of that, so a lot of that. So it's some very expensive gas we got in storage for the winter.
Okay, and winding back to the FX picture here, so we do have that strong dollar driving so much of what's going on across everything. It's all a part of the weak risk sentiment, higher yields complex. And a lot of focus here. I mean, we have Eurodollar sort of dribbling lower. We're still some ways off the cycle lows, and especially far from the cycle lows in cable, because a lot of that was associated with the big gilt market wipeout. But elsewhere, interesting as dollar yen continues to drift well above 145. The Prime Minister Kishida was out in an interview seeming to sort of support Kuroda's efforts at the Bank of Japan, and indicating he was certainly happy to keep him on until the end of his term next spring. It's a 10-year term, by the way. It's quite a time commitment when you select a Bank of Japan governor, and was asking companies to raise wages if they're going to raise prices for the customers. So there's still that focus on wages needing to rise before there's any kind of policy implication. I think as long as, obviously, as the dollar's headed higher and yields are headed higher, this will continue to stress the dollar yen situation. But dollar CNH, so dollar renminbi, also in focus here. We've risen all the way back to this key 720 area that was the high for the cycle in 2019 and early 2020 during the pandemic breakout. Do we see more pressure on China? So far, still just a reflection of the strong dollar, not necessarily a weak renminbi, broadly speaking. But I think there's a lot of pressure there, and I'm not completely against conspiracy theories suggesting that the U.S. is somewhat weaponizing the dollar in its ongoing confrontation with China. And then the weakest of the lot, the Aussie and the Kiwi, the Aussie in a world of hurt, weak risk sentiment, a dovish RBA, and rising yields elsewhere. I mean, the mix is just toxic, and the deserved strong new lows for Aussie dollar here. Now, let's head back over to equities, Peter, because obviously we're leaning against these lows for the cycle in the S&P 500, already beyond that for the tech-heavy NASDAQ and interest rate-sensitive NASDAQ. Are you just looking mostly broadly here? I guess you have to until we start to get the earnings rolling in, but you've got a key name here on slide 8.
Yeah, that there were not a lot of equity stories to pull out that I found interesting. So, but the one, of course, was the TSMC and the semiconductors industry more broadly. We had a big move yesterday to the downside, Nvidia, Lam Research, etc. And it's because U.S. have introduced new export rules that are targeting a lot of Chinese companies. China is doing everything they can to circumvent the current export bans so they can keep their supply chain of semiconductors running for the domestic use cases. But the U.S. has expanded its restrictions around certain AI applications and supercomputing. And they're also now restricting more on the equipment side, and that's why companies like ASML and Lam Research, etc., has been impacted negatively. You had TSMC down 8%, the biggest decline in multiple years. And as you can see on slide 8 here, their 5-year weekly share price. I mean, it's well, I I don't know what you say, John, but I find that to be a very ugly chart. Expectations, of course, coming down very rapidly, and it is all due to this fight that the US has determined that semiconductors, that is the key technology to secure in terms of national interest, and that's why it's through the US CHIPS Act that it's being pulled back to the US and Europe, and of course that's causing massive disruptions right now in the semiconductor industry.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all these issues piling on, and I wonder if some of the piling on is it coincides a bit with the Chinese political calendar, with Xi set for his third term coronation, more or less, in coming weeks. But yeah, in any case, we have to watch that story closely and the response, policy response from China over the coming time frame as well. Now, you've previewed this week's earnings a bit here. You've got PepsiCo up on slide nine, but the big focus has to be on those banks beginning to roll in with their reports on Friday.
Yeah, so it is really the banks on Friday that are in focus, because you know the net interest margin has been under pressure since the pandemic started. Came back a little bit in last quarter in Q2. Expectation, of course, is that they can continue to increase it, and that obviously is very important to improve profitability. And then there's a lot of focus on credit provisions. And then, as I talked about in this internal call, there is a lot of talk about you know the Common Equity Tier 1 capital ratio. So for banks, you have these net income, but then you have these accumulated other comprehensive income, AOCI items. And a lot of the banks are running right now with massive unrealized losses on their bond portfolios. I think what I found on the terminal was actually to the tune of $160 billion in the previous 2 quarters alone for US banks. And that has really impacted regulatory capital. Kaskai, one of the Fed members, were talking about this lately. It's not an issue as long as banks are not forced to liquidate these treasury positions in a whatever liquidity event situation we could experience. If they're able to hold them to maturity, all these unrealized losses will disappear as you get closer to expiration of all these bonds. That's sort of the math of it.
Because they
But
expire at par, but yeah.
Exactly, because they expire at par. So in theory, you don't have a problem, but you have a problem if we suddenly experience a liquidity event and banks will have to liquidate their treasury positions at a loss, because that would quickly eat in for real into the book value and the capital of these banks. So for now, it's just unrealized. It's sort of a concern out there for the Fed. But obviously, if we see further adverse development in this, of course, it will be a renewed focus point. And it is a focus point to the extent that the banks are being told not to increase their dividends and hold back on buybacks to preserve more capital.
Right. Very interesting story there. I should have said, of course, mature, not expire. A bond doesn't expire, it matures. I'm thinking of an options terminology there. Okay, let's head to the macro calendar for today. A lot of central bank talk out, but I think a couple of interesting points here. The NFIB Small Business Optimism Survey in the US is not looking good for many obvious reasons, including tough time finding workers and inflation, et cetera. We also have the first auction in a while of note, the US 3-year auction. Interesting given where the yields are trading. And I don't have it on the calendar here, but there should be a with a 3-year today, there should be a 10-year tomorrow and a 30-year T-bond auction on Thursday. Do we have the return of bond vigilantes? There's a lot of stories. There was a story out on Bloomberg this morning talking about the traditional buyers of US Treasuries have all sort of left the building. And at the same time, you have the Fed also doing QT. So it's a pretty testing time here for the Treasury market. And then I think interesting as well, those two Bank of England speakers later, especially Bailey. This guy has just no credibility, and I think is going to be struggling to keep his job in coming months here. But could be a test of sentiment towards sterling around that speech. The FOMC minutes up tomorrow. Not terribly interested in that. We did have Vice Chair Brainard. With who I think is a closet dove, at least among the Fed members of note, and out with some more cautious language yesterday, sort of the most cautious I've seen in a while on what the effects of Fed tightening so far will be. Although she did maintain that we're still maintaining course, market didn't react much, but I think it does just sort of speak to the idea that we're nearing the peak of the cycle soon, at least at the short end of the US yield curve. For where the Fed is going to take rates. So, interesting point there, but not expecting much from those FOMC minutes. The September CPI data point on Thursday is far more interesting, and I think much more from the angle that does the market really pull much away from it in terms of information value, even if it does surprise somewhat on the soft side. Not saying it will, but if it does, isn't one single print really enough to shift the odds here much? Given everything else that's going on, don't know. We'll see. We also have the February, sorry, the September retail sales from the US on Friday. All right. We think it's pretty touchy times out there for sentiment. Be aware of the risks of volatility expansion when selling picks up pace. Volatility often expands quite viciously in these bear markets. So be aware of that. Stay careful out there. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.